Thank you, Eve, and thank you, Carolyn and Eve, for inviting me to participate in this symposium. I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you about beetles. And I guess similarly to Peter Cranston's question, what can immatures tell us? Let's let them speak. The Staphylinoidea is quite a diverse and worldwide group. You can see here it consists of seven families, which are on their way to being six families shortly, comprising a total of over 4,000 genera and almost 62,000 presently valid species. They have extremely varied biology as well, including many predators such as, well, I won't try to use the mouse with my left hand, the staphylinids on the far right, the scidmenids next to them are scidmenids are all predatory. Staphylinids are mainly predatory. Also, a few of the agirtids have predatory elements. There's a little bit of predation maybe in sylphids. Many of them are microphagous, using feeding on very small particles like hydrenids and teleids, probably some of agirtids, a number of liotids, carrion feeders in the sylphidae, and fungus feeders scattered around, a number of liotidae, some of the staphylinidae, and occasionally agirtids. There's very active taxonomic work going on in staphylinoids these days. There are around 600 to 800 additional species a year being described. So the numbers are going up and up with no end in sight. Work on the larvae is not proceeding quite that fast. This is an array of larvae that doesn't really represent the full morphological variation that you'd see if you looked at all of them, but they were ones I happen to have pictures of. Again, arranged family by family, left to right here. This diagram shows the different numbers of taxa in the different families at different hierarchical levels, and I won't try to really deal with all of them. But you can see that out of the 4,000 described genera, only 500 have had larvae described. And out of the 62,000 species, only 1,100 species. So we have a long way to go before we really know all about the larvae of Staphylinoidea. Another way of looking at this, in 1990, Al Newton reviewed the status of descriptions of larvae in Staphylinoformia, actually a broader group. And I've just extracted that data for Staphylinoidea. So the dark bars, well, the numbers and the line indicate the numbers of described subfamilies in each of the families, with the scope of Staphylinidea adjusted to its current classification. The dark bars indicate the percentage of subfamilies with known larvae, and the light bars are, in Al's paper in 1990, and the light bars are the percentages now known. You can see there have been some hydrenid subfamilies added without their larvae being described, so we actually lost ground there. Otherwise, it's stayed the same at 100%, or we gained a little bit. If we go down to genera, the percentages drop way down, except in the sylphids, and we're doing reasonably well in the agirtids, and those are, as you can see from the numbers of genera, those are the two smallest families in the superfamily, and the sylphids have been a very popular and heavily studied group. If we continue on to the species level, the percentage bars mostly drop down to almost oblivion. Staphylinids are, maybe 2% or something. So we have a very long way to go in learning what everything is at the species level. Now, how useful are larval characters in assessing phylogeny of Staphylinoidea? Well, so far there's been no larval support found for the superfamily, although there is some for the Staphylinoformia. There are several adult characters shown here that support the Staphylinoidea as a monophyletic group. When we go down a little lower, then things do look a little better than that. And there are several characters supporting what's been called the Tiliad group, consisting of Tiliads and Hydrenids. So there's several larval characters there, one pupil character as well. And there are also adult characters supporting that pairing. On the right, we have the Liodid group, Liodids and Agirtids, which have, again, some larval characters and also adult characters not shown here. The remaining three families are also well supported on the basis of larval and also some adult characters. A number of these are mouthpart characters, but also things like the structure of the tentorium, ketotaxy on the leg, and the presence of subantennal glands, although those also occur in Hydrenidae. Relationships among those groups, while there's some support for Liodid group plus Staphylinid group, but there seems to be somewhat stronger support for instead Tiliad group plus Liodid group being sister group to the Staphylinid group. If we go down a little lower, you can see here there is larval character support for a number of the families. Hydrenids and Tiliads both do. The Tiliads, one interesting character here is the Tiliads have an obtect pupa, which only occurs one other place in the superfamily, which will come up quite a bit later, in fact. The Agirtids are one exception. There's only an adult character supporting monophyly of that group so far. And another exception to families being supported by larval characters is, although the Scidmenidae do have a character supporting them, which is also found in the Salaphine Staphylinids, Staphylinidae, in the broad sense, only has a derived character supporting it if you include the Scidmenids in it. And this is part of the reason that action is being taken in an upcoming paper by Gravenikov and Newton. Now, within families, there are also a number of good characters scattered around. Within Hydrenids, there are some ketotaxic characters in several places. One subfamily has egg bursters. There are several characters in the Tiliads, although those haven't really been studied all that much at the larval level. Agirtids, one subfamily, has a nice synapomorphy. Several clades within Liodids have larval characters supporting them. One of the subfamilies of Liodids is the Colonini, which is worldwide. The larvae are still unknown. They're believed to be possibly on subterranean fungi, which some of the, they might be. A few other Liodid subfamilies feed on subterranean fungi. Both subfamilies of Sylphids have derived characters supporting them. And within the Scidmenids, there are a few larval synapomorphies supporting various clades. But again, those have not very many of them are known, and they haven't been studied extensively yet. Now, the Staphylinids, as a much larger family, are going to take a few slides to get through. Lawrence and Newton in 1982 divided the Staphylinids in a broader sense than was traditional into four groups of subfamilies. And the first of these is the Omaliine group, which appears to be monophyletic on the basis of tentorial bridge structure and the pattern of loss of pupil spiracles. Several of the subfamilies have derived larval characters supporting them. Second largest of these, the Omaliini, has a unique combination of derived characters, but each one of those occurs elsewhere in either the Omaliine group or other places in the family. And three of the subfamilies in the Omaliine group still have unknown larvae: M. pilini from the Pacific Northwest of North America, Neophanini from Chile, and Proto-Salaphini from Southeast Asia. The second of the subfamily groups is the Tachyporine group, which it now appears, based on the work of Ash and Newton, probably is not monophyletic. There are some groups within it that certainly are and have good characters of larvae as well as adults. the subfamily Tachypariini itself is probably not monophyletic, but Hebrasyriini, Trichophyini, and Alliochiriini all have good larval characters. And the subgroups shown here, Olestheriini is just a single genus, but Phliochiriini appears to be paraphyletic with respect to that, but the two of them together do have a few nice larval synapomorphies, and those two plus some of the Tachypariini have at least one larval character as well. Another pair of subfamilies, the Hebrasyriini and Trichophyini here, have several nice larval characters as well. And a large group of those two plus the huge Alliochiriini, which is over 12,000 species, although I don't know the numbers exactly, but probably less than 1% of the genera of Alliochirines have described larvae, would be my guess. But a group including them is well supported. The third subfamily group is the Oxytheline group, and these are supported by having a long looped gut in conjunction with their saprophagus or mycophagus habits, and that's the case in both the adults and the larvae. And they also have a complex mandibular apex instead of a simple acute apex, which presumably is also tied in with those feeding habits. Several of the subfamilies here, again, have larval characters supporting them. The Scyphidiines, which used to be treated as the family Scaphidiidae, Trigonurines, Apatethesines. The Pyosteini are questionably monophyletic and seem to be paraphyletic with respect to Osauriini, which are mostly things that are mostly in wood or leaf litter, feeding on those substrates. Trigonurine and Apatethesine have an interesting pattern of apically frayed body seedy instead of just normal tapered seedy. And that's something that occurs in the next subfamily group as well. Let's see, Pyosteini and Osauriini have some nice mouth part characters. And these three subfamilies have a series of larval characters. The Staphylinine group is the last of these subfamily groups. And they all have fused palpigers. And then most of the subfamilies have larval characters supporting them. One exception is the Pseudopsini, which is interesting because the adults of that group are very distinctive, and yet the larvae don't seem to have any derived characters unique to them. Again, the Soliariini, a monogeneric subfamily from Chile, has unknown larvae so far. And that that was originally thought to be somewhere near the Omaliines, but on the basis of adult characters appears to fall in the Staphylinine group, although its position is still unresolved. One really interesting character is the Paterini have paired very long trichobothria, a pair each on the head, the stipes, and the pronotum, which is found nowhere else in staphylinids. They also have, as far as known, only two instars instead of three, which is rather novel. And the other place that the obtect pupa occurs is in the subfamily Staphylinini. So the teleids have that way outside the staphylinids. Staphylinines have that. Everything else has an exerate pupa. And within the Staphylinine group, there are several well-supported clades, although there's still not a fully resolved satisfactory structure for this group. I won't really try to go through all of these, but Stenines and Eosthetines are quite well supported on adult characters as well. And there are adult characters, though not larval characters so far, supporting them plus the Scidminidae. And this is sort of the basis for Grebennikoff and Newton placing the Scidminidae within this Staphylinine group and synonymizing that family or sinking the family into Staphylinidae. Paterini and Staphylinini have a number of larval characters as well as adult characters. And the two of them plus Pseudopsini also have a complex of mouthpart modifications that help support them. and even more mouthpart characters if you add in the leptotyph lines, which are minute little interstitial soil-dwelling things, and yet they seem to be closely related to these very large groups, the Staphylinini and Paterini, the smaller Pseudopsini, which is quite a surprise if you're used to the beetles. The leptotyph lines are all tiny little thread-like things on the order of a millimeter or less in length. And everything in the Staphylinine group except for Oxyporini, which are fungus-feeding, and Megalopsidiini, which are oddball things that turn out to be predaceous like the rest of the group except Oxyporini, have a couple nice larval characters uniting them. And the entire Staphylinine group except Oxyporini shares having a particular large pore, which may be a gland, on the epicranium and sequentially on all the thoracic and abdominal terga. So now a logical thing at this point would be to say, oh, and here's the summary of all this, here's a phylogeny. Well, I sort of started doing that and I said, oh, well, there's not really much point in that. You sort of get little clusters here and there that are nicely resolved, not a lot of resolution basally for the most part. But several recent studies that have looked at various scopes of analysis, looking at both larval and adult characters and sometimes morphological data as well, have found that the larvae contribute significantly to increasing the resolution and or the robustness of the resolution of phylogenies. And that certainly suggests that it's worthwhile to continue the exercise of trying to associate and or rear additional taxa and figure out more about the full range of variation of larvae within the Staphylinoidea. And another point that I'd like to make on them is that I didn't try to go into the level of genera, but based on what we know so far, it appears as though there are very frequently good generic characters, so the genera can be pretty recognizable. And we have a lot more work to do before we get those percentage bars raised up to a little more thorough level of coverage. And that's going to be hindered by the fact that people keep describing and discovering more and more new taxa every year. So in closing, I'd like to thank not only all the publications that have been that have come out on immature Staphylinoidea, but also for access to unpublished things. Al Newton for his catalog of Staphylinoformia, which within the next 6 months should be going online, and for access to upcoming papers, him, Vasya Grebennikov, and Dave Clark, those two papers listed there. And the images here were taken by my intern, Kristen Martinez, with support from the Beetle Tree of Life grant. And I hope that one of the things that will come out of the Beetle Tree of Life grant is a more thorough taxon sampling analysis of adult characters, larval characters, and molecular data that may help us resolve some of the persisting questions about resolution within the Staphylinoidea. Thank you.
We have time for a question. Any question for Margaret?
Everybody's running off to the judges meeting, correct?
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Oh, actually, there's a question.
Oh, here's a question.
Mm-hmm. The other one is
post-ratio.
What are they?
The hypopharyngeal muscle discs are two little discs on the hypopharynx that muscles attach to. So when you clear a head and look at it, they're two little facing things like that that have muscle connections between them. I believe the muscle is transverse, yeah. And what was the second structure? Prothoracic gland. That's a tiny little pore, or maybe it's sometimes been called a campaniform sensilla, or it may be a little gland. It's not really certain exactly what it is, but it's a little gland that is there in some things and not in others.
What is this pore in the prothorax?
It's near. That's a prothorax. It's sort of up in the anterior corners. Dorsal, yeah.